702 Series Edition.
Welcome to the show, Marie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Marie-Lay,
thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. So,
thank you so much.
Marie-Lay, I think last week, actually, while we were talking about travel, there was no way we could talk about travel without mentioning food. And
no, isn't that interesting? Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And even with this conversation, I imagine there will be some travel involved, because some of these lifetime experiences only happen in certain parts of the world.
That's so true. I know, because I think food and eating is part of a big, much larger experience. And sometimes it's the place. I mean, it's not that the food doesn't have to be great. It does. But what makes it even better is where you have it, or the larger experience, you know, the whole sensory experience, how you feel about eating it.
Mm. I live on the Food Channel if I'm not watching home renovations on HGTV. But what I can say, there is this show called, I think it's called Bizarre Foods, Amazing Destinations. And the host travels to all parts of the world. And he's not necessarily going into restaurants. He's even going to enjoy street food and just different things to show the different things to eat. And he absolutely loves it. I wonder, for you being a food critic, what is like your criteria that you look out for when you are going out to have an amazing food experience?
I wonder. I suppose what I look out for immediately is what the chef does, or who the cook is, or what. Well, it depends. Like, say, not street food. You want to know what they actually do. I think knowledge is one of those things that also broadens the enjoyment, the thrill, you know, of food, because it's really the thrill that you're after. That's that once in a lifetime thing, And knowing something about it does definitely do that. I think what started me off on really relishing food and looking for those kind of experiences was, as you say, a travel experience, and it was in Venice. And I asked a chef, and it was at a wonderful Michelin-starred restaurant, what I should have. I said, I'm only going to have two courses. And he said, all right. Well, of course, you have to have the sardines au soir, which is the sweet and sour one. So I said, cool. And he said, but I'm going to choose something else for you as well. I said, great. It was one artichoke on my plate. So I looked at the artichoke and I said, well, it looks like a jolly nice artichoke. And he said, this is the most beautiful artichoke in the world. He said, look out of the window, and we're looking across the sea now, or the, you know, at Venice, across the canal, really. And he said, that island over there, no, not that one, the one to the left. Mm. He said, that's where it grows. And that island grows the best artichokes.
Mm.
And with that, I started eating the artichoke, and I thought, he's right. Sometimes what goes into the food is what comes out. You know, I suppose it's the optimum place to grow it. But also now I know something about it, and it was that wonderful thrill. So I thought, well, now I understand something more about eating. And I think that set me off on a whole trail of other experiences too.
And I think just from what you're saying around the knowledge, because I think that's part of the excitement maybe we don't talk about, because we love to say you eat with your eyes first. You actually eat with the words describing the meal prior to seeing the food. Because when you look at that menu and it starts to use words like, you know, enveloped in and wrapped in with a dash of. And I'm wondering if those words have ever duped you. Because when I look at a menu, I will read and be like, this sounds good, just based on how they word it, if that makes sense.
And understand. And also, I've noticed now on the high-end restaurants, on the tasting menus, they don't use any of those words. Now, they just give you the ingredients. Like, they'll say goat, orange, cheese, purple, sweet potato, whatever it is. And then maybe they'll say something like I'm thinking about a one, you know, Le Creative.
Yes,
which
we've had
just
him
one of my favorite foods.
On our food feature before, yes.
And everything you eat there is absolutely wonderful from a whole lot of points of view. It's also that once in a lifetime experience thing, because not only is he's just our best cook, I think, our best chef, but he's so careful about evoking experiences. As a lot of his people are from South Africa, but a lot of people are tourists.
Mm.
Now, he is selling South Africa in a way, so the ingredients are about South Africa.
And we,
of course, enjoy them, and we're kind of proud of them. But he has such a wonderful way of putting all of this together so that the taste is exquisite. I think there's no other word than exquisite for his food. But it's just wonderful. You can't do better than that, I think, if it's on your bucket list.
So let's start then on this bucket list. And I'm glad we're starting right at home, because you don't need a passport to go and experience some of the fantastic meal experiences that you can have in this country. I mean, mentioning Wandile, to even try and get a booking, you're going to wait a while. It's a beautiful, intimate setting, and the menu changes regularly, which is quite exciting about it. Where else in this country would you say you have to try this? And I have a feeling you're going to mention something in Cape Town.
Wrong.
Really? Oh, wow. Because Cape Town has some of the most amazing restaurants. Yes.
There are wonderful restaurants in Cape Town. That's absolutely true. And I've been to some excellent ones. And the ones that I like talking about are in Johannesburg, because we've got about three times as many restaurants as they have, but we also have some really nice ones that people forget about. A lot of magazines, of course, talk about Cape Town ones because a lot of the magazines are there.
Yes, yes.
But we've got excellent ones. And I mean, I think another lovely, not only a lovely place, but I'm thinking of one of the nicest meals that I've ever had. And it was actually a plate of food, a bowl even of food. And it was at Sojour in Houghton. And it's Freddie Diaz is the chef, also another excellent chef. And he made this magic meal. Quite a while ago, his mother was very, very ill. She did eventually pass away, and he was so desperate to keep her alive and interested in food, and also full of, you know, he wanted to give as much nutrition as possible. She wasn't, of course, very interested in food, so he was really working at this. And he came up with this, it's called 10 a day risotto, and it's actually on his menu still. It's the most delicious dish, I think. If you had to single out a dish, because it's so, it's really made with love. I mean, I know that sounds corny because people like to say that, but that it's still full of all of that love. Not only it's in a kind of a bowl, which is always interesting too. You know, people like to eat in a bowl, and don't mean like a poke bowl. This is more like a deep dish. So already you're quite cosseted, you know. And it's a risotto dish right at the bottom. But first of all, you go through layers of crisp and soft and sour and sweet and cheesy and umami ingredients until you finally get to this beautiful risotto at the bottom.
And I think what you are sharing about, like the moment you said made with love, and you speak about a risotto in a bowl, I almost imagine myself holding it. It sounds like a comfort meal.
It is. That's exactly what it is. And it's super comfort. And just the knowledge as well. There's knowledge again, I guess. But knowing something about it and why he developed this dish. It changes because, of course, the vegetables change all the seasons. But the concept always remains the same. And I think if I had to pick a dish that made the biggest impression on me, it would be that one. And yet it's not a very, you know, it's a fairly simple dish.
You know what you remind me of with the story? You know, on Ratatouille, when the critic comes at the end.
Yeah.
And then he he is transported back to his childhood. And I think many people love dishes that are quite nostalgic, not necessarily because of the flavors, but how it makes you feel when you're enjoying it.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, lots of people like, when you're ill and your mother sort of puts soft boiled egg with bread or something like that. And for some reason, it's ridiculously simple, but for some reason, it makes you feel nice.
Yes.
But what my mom used to do was wonderful. She gave us, both my sister and I, for our birthdays, she always said, you can have exactly what you want. Now, she hadn't been the most excellent cook in her life, but she was becoming a very good cook by doing these things. And she would take advice from her friends about how to cook. And she had great foodie friends. And I remember one day she said, well, it was my birthday coming up. And she said, well, you know, what are you going to be having? And I said, oh, I'd love a cassoulet. And she said, that's from France, isn't it? So I said, yeah. And of course, in France, it's a throwaway food dish because you've got bits of pork left over, bits of sausage, bits of duck and things like that. And you've got lots of beans all the time and you create this lovely dish. For us, of course, it's a bit more difficult because you've got to get all those things. And she did. And she got a person on the line who explained to her from France how to make it.
Wow.
And I was so delighted. It was so delicious. But somebody who went to all that trouble and care and to give me this wonderful dish also makes it one of those special things.
So I actually want to jump to not just necessarily touching on specific destinations that people should go to try certain culinary experiences like wine tasting in Bordeaux, but the specific items that you must have in your life. And I'll be honest, I had seen snails so many times on menus. The only time I actually was ever open to trying snails was when I was in Paris. And there's something that happens, and I'm so glad I got to say I've eaten snail, I've eaten, this type of game meat. But there are other very unique things like foie gras. What are the things that you think should be on the list of things you must taste in your lifetime? Obviously, first choice is where they originate from. Like if you're going to try sushi, go and have it in Japan. What are the other things that you're like, oh, you must have this in your lifetime?
Oh, heavens. Okay. Well, a lovely thing was this. Funny enough, this is another South African thing. A friend of mine from England was here and he said, what do I have to eat in South Africa? And I said, chicken feet. So he said, no, you're not serious. So I said, of course I'm serious. That's what we eat.
Yes.
So he said, okay, so where do we go? So I said, okay, I know a chef friend, Abso Kotsukwani, and he's going to make you chicken feet. I'll ask him first. And he said, he's got them on his starter menu. So off we went. This guy was blown away. I mean, you know that lovely gelatinous sort of way that they kind of almost melt down?
Yes, yes.
He had them cooked in orange. It was so delicious. This guy was... I mean, I don't know what people are think when they hear chicken feet. Or they think they're going to eat toenails or something. You know, they don't know how lovely that texture is. So I guess he'll be bringing his British friends to South Africa to Abso Kotsukwani to eat chicken feet.
And to everybody that's listening around the chicken feet, I mean, you can also, I would love to try how the Chinese prepare chicken feet because they also have their version. I think sometimes they do it sweet and sour or sticky. It's definitely an experience I would love to have. And I've had Wagyu beef here, but I would love to have Wagyu beef elsewhere and see how they prepare it.
Exactly. And I mean, this is another interesting thing about food. I mean, when you find the foods that people like the most, apart from sweet foods, which is in a whole different category, but you find that fatty foods, no matter whether people are on diet or not, fat actually does taste good. So it makes meat test good. Of course, that's the thing that makes our lamb and all of the things like our Karoo lamb, if it's got that fatty edge, you know, when it's cooked and that edge starts crisping. It's so delicious as well. But also Wagyu beef. I mean, it's the ultimate fatty beef. But it's not a beef with a hell of a lot of individual taste.
Mm.
Now, what has also been interesting with Wandile is he's got a farmer in KwaZulu who has his Wagyu beef, but they're crossed with our own Nguni cattle. So those cattle have got a lot more flavor, and the fattiness of the Wagyu combined with that is probably the most ultimate beef experience.
And it sounds absolutely delicious, but I have seen how more eastern parts of the world do things a little bit differently to us. One ingredient, I've tasted it before, and I think it could be an acquired taste, but truffles. Are you a fan of truffles?
Wonderful.
And is it something that you think every South African must add to their bucket list? But more importantly, what should they have their truffles in? Because you could have it in that risotto. You could have it in so many different dishes.
You could. And truffles always work well with being sort of semi-mushrooms themselves. They always work well in that environment. But actually, this is probably one of the most lovely things that I've ever eaten as well. Really late one night, a restaurant I was working late and with a photographer. And we said, can we come in? And she said, no, I'm sorry, the restaurant's closed. So he said, oh, gee. And she said, well, I can give you some truffles. So he said, truffles? So she said, yes, I'll just cook them quickly in butter and you can have them with pasta. And that's exactly what she did. They were white truffles, just cooked in butter with freshly cooked pasta. And she locked the door and she said, tell the guy outside when you're leaving and just, there we go. It was so nice. Truffles are just fantastic. Yeah, I think if you eat a truffle for the first time, you're not quite sure how your taste buds should be working with it. But the second time you have it, when you recognize it, you understand truffles. How are you with truffles? Have you had white ones?
I've had it in a risotto and I've had it in pasta, both black and white.
Oh, nice.
And I think it could be an acquired flavor for some people, depending. I almost feel like truffles are like blue cheese. Some people just can't get their minds around that. On the WhatsApp line, Sam is saying, please share the restaurant again for the risotto dish, the one that's in Houghton.
It's called Sejour, Sejour.
Thank you so much. Another WhatsApp message says, do you know South Africa has its own truffles?
I do know that. And Namibia has their own truffles too, but the Namibian truffle is quite different. It's a big white truffle, very interesting. And funny enough, I've never had it. But I've got somebody who's going to take me on a trip there. But South Africa has their own truffles in Pretoria. Does anybody know that?
There's two scientists.
Yeah, there are two scientists, two quite young women. One's a biologist and one's a real scientist, but in a different league, more on the chemistry side. But these truffles aren't made chemically. No, we actually grow our own truffles in South Africa the hard way around. We actually grow them on another tree. So you can get them in KwaZulu again. You can get them in the Cedarburg. But these two women grow them in a lab. They grow them in moss. In a laboratory, so there's no outside interference. They use the spores from Alba truffles, the ones in Italy, the white ones. They use the Perigord ones from France, and they use other ones too. And they grow these truffles perfectly. They're very careful not to charge less than the other farmers in South Africa, so that it's all fair. But there are the absolutely perfect truffles.
Another WhatsApp. I look forward to trying those South African ones. Another WhatsApp message that says, I've just returned from China. I saw tripe, in inverted commas, offal, on every single menu. Don't know why, but sort of thought it was more of a South African thing. Food is truly universal. Also had black truffles for the first time, which was amazing. And I do agree, there are things that we eat as South Africans that we think nobody else does. That you can find tripe in so many countries where it's a delicacy.
It's almost the national dish. It's almost the national dish of every country. Every country has a national dish that's a tripe dish, more or less. If you think about France, Italy, South America, China, all sorts of places, they've always got a wonderful tripe dish. So I'm not sure that it's better than ours, but...
Listen, no tripe dish will beat my grandmother's tripe dish. Please.
No, exactly.
Please. Very specific way. And then where in the world would you say a person must go and experience the best oysters? Because I think not all oysters are equal, not being a seafood person at all, but just based on the response. Where would you say is the one place in the world that a person should definitely...
I would say Namibia, but France, of course, likes their oysters too. But Namibian oysters, I think, are fantastic. France, and I must say the French like to have their oysters with stuff. I like oysters as they are.
Just so simple.
Exactly, with some lemon.
My goodness, this list of places that one could travel to and foods that they could enjoy is almost endless. And I only hope that more and more of you listening are intrigued to go and explore the culinary world in this series that brings us to the end of episode 2 on our series of experiences, once in a lifetime experiences. We did travel. Today was all about food. Thank you so much.